We're going to be discussing chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. So I'm going to begin by asking you some questions so that I'll get everybody's attention. I'm going to ask you three questions. What is confidential knowledge? What is more confidential knowledge? And what is most confidential knowledge? Because Krishna is saying here in the ninth chapter that Raja Guhyam is the most confidential. So what's confidential knowledge? Confidential knowledge. The general way that people use confidential knowledge is, don't tell anybody. I have something very confidential. That's one kind of confidential. There's another kind of confidential. And that other kind of confidential is what Krishna presents in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna discloses the self, who we really are. And that's confidential because it's very dear to each one of us. It's our real self. But it's the kind of confidential knowledge that you can express it as Krishna expresses it, and people don't understand it because it's confidential. And unless one has the right kind of qualifications, then you won't understand that confidential knowledge, even if it's very clearly expressed. So that confidential knowledge is disclosed very richly, nicely, in chapter 2. All religions of the world teach about the soul. Well, most of them teach about the soul. Some don't. But what is a soul? Do a survey sometime. Ask the people that you know. Do you believe in the soul? Yes. What is your idea? What is your concept of what is a soul? And I've done that. And it's either you have to laugh or you have to cry. How many different answers you get. Another time I'll share with you some of those hilarious answers. And people are very serious about those answers. But it's very clearly expressed in Bhagavad Gita. What is the soul? Of those who have some understanding of the soul, then they're eligible for more confidential knowledge. What's more confidential? It's distinguishing the individual soul from the supreme soul, because some persons think Aham Brahmasmi. It's stated in the scripture. Aham Brahmasmi. I am soul. I am spirit. And there isn't anything else. That means I'm not accountable to anybody. There isn't two. There's only one. And that's Brahman. But Krishna very clearly expresses there's two. In fact, there's more than two. There's unlimited, multiple. In the spiritual world, there's unlimited diversity, although it's Advaita Tattva. It's all of the non-dual nature. Unlimited living entities. All of their full, rich spiritual nature. All in diverse, non-tinged with material relationships with the Supreme. There's the Supreme, and there's the individual. And that's discussed in a number of places in Bhagavad Gita. One of the nice places it's discussed is chapter 13. One of the verses, if you search and see which verses Prabhupada spoke the most about, one of those verses is in the 13th chapter, where Prabhupada would like to speak very much about the difference between in chapter 13, there's six questions and there's six answers. Arjuna wants to know about Purusha and Prakriti, Jnanam and Jnayam, and the field of activity, Kshetra and Kshetragya. Six. So when Krishna speaks about what is Kshetra, it's the it's the body. The body is the field of activity. And the one who knows the field of activity is Kshetragya. And then Krishna says, Kshetragya Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. There's one living entity that knows all fields of activity. It's like, you know, I know what my, using Prabhupada's phrase, pains and pleasures. I know it was air conditioned in the airplane and here it's hot, for example. And so I'm feeling whatever perspiration I'm feeling. So I know what I'm feeling, the fan and the noise and so on. And then each one of us, we also have our feelings and thoughts and so on. And each one of us knows those feelings and thoughts, but we don't know the feelings and thoughts of all living beings. But there's one that knows simultaneously the thoughts and the feelings of all living beings. And not only at this moment, but all times in the past, and even into the future also. That's like information overload. We can't even conceive of what that is. One of Prabhupada's disciples, Mataji, Saradiya, told me this. She asked Prabhupada, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, should we think how this chanting is beneficial for all living entities? Prabhupada's reply is, is it possible for you to even think of all living entities? Just think of the holy name when you're chanting the holy name. Absorb your mind in the holy name. Because we don't have that capacity. Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. So there's the individual and the supreme. Atma and Paramatma. Brahman and Parabrahman. And that's more confidential knowledge. Yes? And what's the most confidential knowledge? That's chapter 9. Most confidential knowledge is very confidential. When the living entity engages in that relationship with the Supreme, what's that like? Not only what do they experience, but what does he experience? Coming Attractions, chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. I'll say two other things. That's the subject, it's devotional service. But it's pure devotional service, as distinct from mixed devotional service. And Krishna clarifies that in this chapter. I'll make a quick overview of the chapter. And then I'll show this nice presentation of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. How many chapters are there in Bhagavad Gita?
18.
Where's what? Here, you're a young boy. What's 18 divided by 2? No. Shocked you. 9. 18 divided by 2. So chapter 9 is right in the middle. Our acharyas describe in the following way why the most confidential knowledge is right in the middle of Bhagavad Gita is for a reason. In fact, there's three reasons. Because it's most important. Here's their three reasons. Very nice. One is, when you have some valuables in your home, supposing some heirlooms that were passed on from your ancestors and through generations and generations, so using the traditional model of life in India, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, where do you keep those valuables? You keep them at the front gate. We don't have front gates, but front gate, in your backyard, or right in the middle of the house, in a protected place. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita is right in the middle. What is pure devotional service is right in the middle, because it's so valuable, so important. Second is, when there's a procession, the guest of honor, the VIP, does he go at the front of the parade, the end of the parade, or the middle of the parade? In the middle. One recollection from practical experience was when the governor of UP, does somebody know how to fix this? When the governor of UP came to the Krishna Balaram Mandir for the installation of the deities. Were you there, Haridas, for that? So, when the governor came, there first came the military with their, you know, and then came the governor, and then came the retinue of the governor, you know, in those days, little white ambassadors with the red light that goes around and around and has a little funny siren. So that was the procession of the governor of UP coming. He was in the middle. Similarly, this most confidential knowledge, what pure devotional service is, which is the essence of the message of Bhagavad Gita, it's right in the middle. And the third example that's given is, what part of the house, if you're going to construct a house, what's the most important part of a house? Think of an A-frame house. It's the main support beam. You can say, is it the doors or the windows or the walls or the roof or the rafters? All those things are certainly important, but the main thing is the support beam, that without it, you can have all the doors and all the windows and all the walls and all the rafters and all the roof and all the shingles. You don't have a house. Main support beam, and it's right in the middle. So this chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita is a very important chapter. And so now I'll give a summary of the sections of this chapter quickly. The first is what I call the Mahima section. It's offering, what are the glories? Do, 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 do. Krishna's declaring, listen, Arjuna, this is so important because it's the king of knowledge. It's the most confidential knowledge. It's supremely pure. It's the topmost, pavitram idam uttamam, pravyaksha avagamam dharmyam susukam, not only sukam, but susukam, kartam avyayam. So nice. And it, who can directly see the soul and God, but through the medium of chapter 9, this knowledge I'm just about to impart to you, Arjuna. Pratyaksha means direct perception. There's three primary means of knowing something. Pramana in Sanskrit, or epistemology in English. That's a nice word, epistemology. How do you know something? So one is direct perception, pratyaksha. But who can see the soul? So shabda is the main means of knowing. Reason you can't figure it out, but through shabda. But this particular shabda is such that if you receive it properly, you can directly perceive. Confidential, more confidential, and most confidential knowledge. Very important. But then Krishna says, there's two qualifiers. First it's positive and then it's negative. The first qualifier that Arjuna has is that he's not envious. Because if one is envious, supposing there's something confidential, and I say, or somebody says to another person something confidential, but they're envious. Are they going to understand that something? They'll misunderstand. They're guaranteed they'll misunderstand. They'll understand something, but not the confidential thing. It's a personal disqualifier to hear from Krishna and be envious of Krishna. The qualification is to be non-envious. And Krishna says that. Arjuna, you can understand this because you're non-envious. There's another necessary qualification for understanding this knowledge. And that is faith. Krishna says it in reverse. That those that are faithless can't understand this, and they're again and again brought into this material world, cast adrift, without ability to understand the Supreme. This most confidential knowledge. That's the first section. The next section is very deep. You can read it and read it again and read it again and read it again and read it again, and it's still very deep. Very deep. But it's essential knowledge to understand when Krishna is going to disclose this most confidential knowledge. The first thing he discloses is his relationship with the creation, which should seem like, hey, that's ABC, let's get to the deep stuff. But the relationship that Krishna has with material creation, if we don't understand it properly, we cannot engage in devotional service properly, because devotional service requires that we are interacting with matter in a non-fruitive enjoyment spirit, nor a non-speculative spirit, but in simply seeing it as it is in its relationship with Krishna. So how does Krishna describe his relationship with the creation? He describes it in what I call Upanishadic double talk. Like those of you that have read Ishopanishad. He walks and he does not walk. He's very near and he's very far away as well. He's within everything and he's outside of everything. Now what do you do with statements like that? It doesn't make sense. It's not like logical. So become an impersonalist and say it's all one. That's what some people do. But Krishna makes similar statements in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita and then explains it. One of those statements is, everything is within me, but I am outside of everything. It's like saying we're in the temple room and we're outside the temple room at the same time. And we can't do that. We can be in the temple room, or we can be out of the temple room, but we can't be in the temple room and out of the temple room at the same time. But Krishna can. Everything is within Krishna, and Krishna is aloof from everything, has no apparent connection with it. Then he explains how that is so. Very nice metaphor. Listen carefully. He gives the metaphor of the wind blowing in the mighty sky. So, there's the wind. And the wind is blowing. What's happening with the sky? Nothing. Because the sky is more subtle. The wind can be still, the wind can be moving, wind can be a hurricane. And the sky, because it's more subtle, isn't moved at all. Similarly, Krishna being the rest and support and basis of everything, although everything is within him, he's unchanged. Very nice example. Very nice example. Krishna is transcendental. Although everything comes from him and rests in him, he's transcendental. His relationship with matter is, he's the source of it, but he's transcendental. And devotional service leading to his devotional service is to take those pieces of matter and use them in service to their source. He's at Hokkaido. We can't see him with these material senses, but he's the proprietor. He's the enjoyer. He's the master. And there's a means of devotional service, and we can realize him, pratyaksha, by this pure devotional service, or most confidential knowledge. End of section. Then Krishna goes back to the next section. He goes back to the topic of faith. Second time. And says, those that are faithless can't understand me. But there are some, then he becomes very broad and says, there are some who ekatvena pratakvena bahuda vishvatomukham. They're also my devotees. Krishna is cast a big net. Says, they're my devotees too. The monists, ekatvena, the pantheists, pratakvena bahuda, worship many. And those who worship the universal form, Vishwarup, they're my devotees also. What Krishna is doing here is, by definition, he's being inclusive, but in a moment he'll become exclusive. Because what's exclusive is that devotional service really is unmixed. Anyabhilasha to shunyam. Jnana karma jnavratam. It's exclusive. It doesn't include fruit of intention. I serve Krishna, Krishna gives me. I got two pockets, my Krishna pocket and my own pocket. So much for Krishna, so much for me. So much for Krishna, so much for me. That's a nice practice. Me, me, Krishna. Oops, I get an extra one over there. So, where Krishna is going to take us is pure devotional service is unmixed. Not only, it's unmixed because there's a very clear spiritual conception of who is supreme. He describes those that don't have that proper conception, their worship is misdirected. Avidhi purvakam. It's rendered without complete knowledge. And Krishna gives the complete knowledge. The complete knowledge is, I am the sacrifice. I am the butter. These are all the things that I am. Those that think of me otherwise. So one should just worship Krishna directly. Just worship Krishna directly. And for those who worship Krishna directly, Krishna offers his very special protection. I'm going to skip some part of the chapter, but the special protection that Krishna gives, Krishna describes what he feels. This is the most confidential part of the most confidential chapter, confidential knowledge chapter. What does Krishna feel when somebody approaches him with no motivation, just pure love? He offers his full protection. He regards them with such wonderful esteem. Then, apichet sudaracharo. There is achar, means behavior or conduct. And there's two kinds. Durachar and sadachar. Bad behavior and good behavior. If someone does durachar, what to speak of durachar? Sudurachar. Very bad. It won't happen if my devotees won't do such things. But even if, apichet, even if it was to happen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati calls this working hypothesis. Supposing, and scholars do it all the time, what if, and then they just go off into some thing. Krishna does, what if, even if something that would never happen happens. Like Maharaj Parikshit is putting a snake around the stage because he was in samadhi or in trance meditating and it didn't give him water and kind words. Durachar for a king, a Maharaj Parikshit standard. So how does Krishna regard Maharaj Parikshit? Apichet sudaracharo vajate mam ananyabhak sadureva samantavya. Samantavya. I consider him a saint. Why? Because of his undivided devotional service. Undivided devotional service. In the course of undivided devotional service, there may be some extreme circumstance. Prabhupada gives the example of a tidal wave. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. The tide comes in, the tide goes out, and maybe comes a tidal wave. And the water doesn't stop. It doesn't go back out. It just covers the land and completely everything is underwater. After some time, the water subsides, the tide comes in, the tide comes out. So there may be some extremely unusual circumstance where a devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit, did something that's durachar. But, bhajate mam ananya. Undivided devotion, sadureva samantavya, and kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Krishna corrects the situation. He personally steps in and corrects the situation. Not, you know, remotely. Personally. Directly, personally. That's how much affection Krishna has for his devotee who is in this unmixed position. So then, he concludes the chapter encouraging Arjuna, please become my unmixed devotee. He's already his unmixed devotee. He concludes the chapter with this very important verse. What's the last verse? Ninth chapter? What's the one verse of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says twice? Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Become my devotee. Always think of me. Worship me. And offer your obeisances unto me. Surely you will come to me. Without a doubt. So, this is the most confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. And we'll take you through the most confidential knowledge chapter. Supposed to be sound. A little louder. Can you hear the music? In the back, can you hear some music? Can you use the microphone? There we go. There we go. Okay. So this is set up in such a way that it shows there's three sections of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, and here's the
Your Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I should impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is jointly performed.
So one might ask the question. If it's so nice, everlasting, joyfully performed, so easily done, why don't more people engage in devotional service? And what's the answer is, because they don't have sufficient faith. And there's different categories of not having sufficient faith. Some persons just don't know. Due to ignorance, they have no understanding of the scriptures. Some people have some understanding of the scriptures, but they don't believe what the scriptures say. Some people have some belief, but they hesitate. They're doubtful. Even Krishna makes his message clear again and again and again and again. Very simple, very direct. They can't accept Krishna's words and they can't accept the position of bhakti. They think, they say eulogy is some exaggeration, is just kind of to get you to do something, not of real substance. Rather, they go the other direction and think, this is for weak-minded sentimentalists, this path of bhakti. Or, being too much absorbed in sense gratification, they don't pay attention at all. So, that faithless position, Prabhupada often characterized by the Dr. Frog example. So here's Dr. Frog, who lives in the nice well, and some person comes to visit Dr. Frog and says, Oh, my dear Dr. Frog, there's nice water in your well, but there's another place called the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, and it's so big in comparison to your well. And Dr. Frog thinks, how big?
Twice as big?
Three times as big? Five times as big? No, no, it's much bigger, much bigger. You can't even imagine how many times bigger. Because of one's limited senses and limited experience, when one hears the glories of devotional service, one may think, how can this be so? And so, this is one of the ways that one can become or remain ignorant and faithless. So what is that very special treasure of faith? It's, here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's definition given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When there is conviction that by one thing all other desirable things can be accomplished, sarva karma krita vaya, and faith and devotion is that if we can find the root of all existence and we place our energy, attention, ability and focus upon the root of all existence in devotion, the whole of existence, our existence and existence's existence, will be benefited. Just as by watering the root of a tree, all the parts of a tree are similarly nourished. That's faith. Classic examples, right from Srimad Bhagavatam. So, for progressing in spiritual knowledge, faith is very important. And it's practical. It's not just believe something and do a different something. It's practical. You know, bring your senses to sense objects and engage in service to Krishna. Practical. And there's a difficulty in doing that because we're distracted by desire for sense gratification. Or, what if it's doesn't work? So I hesitate and hold back and maintain attachments. But as faith is nourished, that hesitation and the distraction are to be reduced systematically. If we don't make that effort, then we'll have faith in something else according to the modes of nature. A whole chapter of Bhagavad Gita is on this topic. If we don't have faith in Krishna, we'll have faith in something. Everybody, without exception, has faith in something. And the idea in most confidential knowledge is to bring that faith to the topmost position. So how do we elevate our faith to that topmost position? The standard method described in the scriptures is by associating with those that have faith. With the faithful, with amongst those who are devotees, just like Narada is giving his association to King Prachinibari, who is attached to Karmakanda rituals and fruitive activity and was not paying attention to devotional service. So very kindly Narada gave his association. And King Prachinibari became a pure devotee through that association. And in that association one hears respectfully, as Maharaj Parikshit heard from Shukadeva Goswami, or pictured here, those who had the good fortune of being in Srila Prabhupada's association, they heard from him. And by hearing, faith becomes nurtured and other shelters become dismissed. And of course also by serving. Just as by here, King Prataparudra, because of his hearing and his association, he also got the opportunity to serve with humility Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if we had more time, which we don't, I would go into another section, which I won't. And that is giving an example of Narada Muni. So these other slides are the story of Narada Muni's life. So we're not going to do that. But he, step by step, showed all the features of someone that had insignificant nobody and became a perfectly realized soul through all those same hearing, associating, serving. And he realized the personality of Godhead and achieved his spiritual form at the end of his life, but was fixed in Krishna consciousness throughout his life. And in his next life he became Narada Muni. The same example, the principles of Narada's example perfectly applies to our life also.
There is one object for which the devotional service cannot attain them, but conquer their enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world.
That's the consequence of faithlessness. So, hearing and chanting and associating and serving has to be done in the right consciousness, otherwise full faith won't be properly nurtured.
Krishna's unmanifested form pervades everything, but Krishna himself remains detached from that. Material nature, working under his direction, produces all moving and non-moving beings.
So this is Krishna's relationship with material nature, and it's very profound.
By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence.
So what does it mean, everything rests upon Krishna? Those that were believers in God, but not necessarily Vaishnavas, have...
Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my purposes, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction of Sanatana. Producing all moving and non-moving beings.
Foolish persons do not know Krishna's transcendental and supreme nature. If they consider the human-like form of the Lord to be material, the great souls, however, are undeluded.
So again, here's the consideration of beyond Krishna's relationship with matter, he's the creator and he's yet aloof from his own creation, but from time to time he appears within his own creation. And those that are faithless, when they regard he who creates and then enters into his creation, they think he's like us. He assumes a material form. So this is specifically indicating in chapter 9, I don't assume a material form, I'm a transcendental personality. But unfortunately the foolish persons don't understand, but the great souls, they understand.
Fools deride me when I descend into human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all living. those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitful activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. O Sanatipika, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of God, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
So once again, the concept of Krishna's relationship with material nature and the creation itself, he enters into the creation. Those that understand him, they engage in unmixed devotional service. But now he's going to describe this, those that don't have such a clear conception, but they have some faith, and so they repose that faith in a less than clear way. That's what's coming next. Incomplete conception. Krishna described his unmixed devotees, now he's going to describe his mixed devotees.
Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second. His diverse in many and in the universal form. But it is I who run the rituals. I, the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant, I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandson. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier and the silver ore. I am also the root, the sana, and the gathering of age. I am the goal. The sustainer, the master, the witness. The abode, the refuge. And the most dear friend. And the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. All Arjuna,
I give heat, and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me.
Different worshippers reach different goals. Men who want to attain heavenly planets worship the demigods, and then take birth among them to enjoy godly delights. But such men, after exhausting their pious friends, return to earth. Men who worship ancestors go to the planets of the ancestors, and those who worship ghosts become ghosts. The one who worships Krishna with exclusive devotion goes to him forever.
We're almost done. This is next to the last section. Krishna is describing, depending upon the conception that one has when one worships, and depending upon the worship, one has a different destination. Some have a notion that says, however you worship, you reach the same destination. That's not Krishna's teaching. Here's what Krishna's teaching is.
Those who study the Vedas and hear the sutras, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of simple reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, but enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, for them I carry what they lack. And I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith, actually worship only me, for example. But they do so in a wrong way.
Okay. Avidhi Purva Kam is that phrase.
Yeah. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship me will live with me.
Now comes Krishna's reciprocation of that position of devotion.
Whatever Krishna's devotee does, eats, offers, or gives away in charity, he does as an offering unto the Lord. Krishna reciprocates by carrying what his devotee lacks and preserving what he has. By taking shelter of Krishna, even low-born persons can attain the supreme destination.
If one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, Do that, I will set up for the week as an offering to you. In this way, you will be free from bondage to work with its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever rendered this service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered sainted because he is properly situated in his determination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. How much more is this cell of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings? Therefore, having come to this temporary, miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind, always thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. And worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
This is Krishna and Arjuna going to Mahavishnu in search of the sons of the Brahmana in Dwarka. Conclusion of chapter 9. Krishna's covered in very succinct manner the range of devotional service, from improper understanding to gradually proper understanding applied with faith, improper association, and by following, by practical application of this teaching, one can become so dear to Krishna that, as he's promised in this chapter, he'll bring that person to him and protect them from all difficulties in this world, even though he's neutral. He's very affectionate. He is affectionate upon those who are very devoted to him. End of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.